This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And welcome back to season 4 of the BPD Bunch. I'm your host, Zanny, and today I am here with Alex, Georgette, Madurama, Jay, and Katya. Where in the world is everyone coming from today?
New York.
New Jersey, USA.
I'm from Kolkata in India.
Calgary, Canada.
West Midlands, United Kingdom.
And I'm coming from New Mexico in the United States. So today we are going to be revisiting a topic that we started in the end of season 3, the favorite person. It's one of the hottest topics in the BPD community. If this and other BPD related topics interest you, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications so you don't miss anything. And I'm really excited to have Alex with us. Alex is a PhD candidate, and one of her areas of interest is the favorite person. So Alex, can you give us a definition of the favorite person phenomenon as it relates to BPD?
Absolutely. So a lot of times in BPD, you don't really have a strong sense of who you are inside. So this person kind of becomes someone who you rely on for a sense of yourself and can become someone that you really start to rely on for emotional validation and someone to help you regulate your emotions. This is a relationship where it can really like make or break your day. It can be all consuming, all encompassing. And the way that you feel about yourself and it like generally might be completely dictated by the relationship. There's a lot more I can go into, but really the core of what I see the favorite person as is an external identity.
What are some common patterns or challenges that arise in relationships involving a favorite person and someone with BPD?
The way I view it is it all comes back down to that identity piece. Let's think about abandonment anxiety, for example. If someone becomes your core sense of who you are, losing that person becomes like a nightmare. It becomes like completely losing yourself in that process as well. And when I talk about this, I like to use terms like mentalizing. So mentalizing is the ability to understand what's going on within yourself in terms of like your thoughts, your feelings, your motives, and then also to understand what's going on in another person in the same way. And individuals with BPD, they have a pretty good ability to mentalize generally in their life. But when attachment is really heightened, so when you're in a close relationship with someone and then there comes this fear that this person might leave me, that ability to mentalize can easily break down and it can become a lot harder to understand what's going on in someone else. And it becomes a lot easier to assume what someone else is thinking. Oh, well, they didn't respond to my text with like 3 exclamation points, they must not be excited. And this happens in person too. You know, maybe when you greet someone and you really want them to be so excited to see you. And it's like you can start to perceive little cues of like maybe they didn't hug you tight enough, can feel like a huge rejection. And there can be a lot of assumption in there. Jay, you're smiling. I don't know if I hit on something for you.
Sensitive soul.
Definitely.
I definitely relate to that. Like reading into small signs and making assumptions in my head about what those signs indicate about how somebody feels towards me.
It's painful. Like, it's absolutely painful. I've heard a lot of people talk about too, like the anxiety of like waiting for a text back, or like of not knowing, or just like overthinking everything about the relationship. It's like absolutely painful.
Which of your BPD symptoms are the most closely tied to your experience of having a favorite person, and how does that manifest?
I think that there's a tendency for the relationship with a favorite person to be defined by the extent to which it can dictate your mood in the day. And I find that whether it's just coming from my perception of a situation with that person or their behavior, the extent to which I get dysregulated on any one day is really heightened. Like I notice that I get more dysregulated more frequently. And that's not even to say that that person is doing anything wrong. It's because I've put them on this kind of pedestal. And so any little thing can send me really off the edge. And I feel like I also get a really heightened sense of fear that that person's going to abandon me, which is, although that's a trait that people most associate with BPD, it's not something that I experience a lot in most of my other kinds of relationships, only really in my FP relationships.
I was diagnosed later in life, so at 41. So it was after my diagnosis, I actually found a lot of the information about BPD through Instagram. When I heard of this favorite person, I could look back on my life and see like who were my favorite people. And I could see that it started out with like my grandmother. Like my first FP was my Nanny B. We were very, very close. Her favorite color was purple. My favorite color was purple. We had that extreme closeness. Then I could see that I went through and sort of a little bit in friendships, but when it really manifested itself, it was in a romantic relationship. So with my ex-husband. And I think the symptoms that were tied to that experience was, like Jay said, the emotional regulation. I relied on him for emotional regulation. The fear of abandonment came into it. Like if he was to leave me, irrational anger, which I think comes from like fear of abandonment, not being able to emotionally regulate yourself, and your whole identity being based on how this other person saw you. So I went 19 years with this favorite person that I essentially was using him as an external hard drive. My mood was dependent on his mood, you know. Since then, I got diagnosed simultaneously with the end of that relationship, the end of my marriage, and I made a vow to myself to never have another favorite person again. That I needed to spread the love. If only it was that easy. And I can look back and see, like, I kind of think I've done a pretty good job of it. It hasn't been like an incredibly long time, but I want to be my own favorite person. Having to rely on somebody else for all of those things is not only a horrible experience for us, but it's a horrible experience. In my case, it was a horrible experience for my husband.
I think it's interesting because it is true that the FP relationship really activates like all the symptoms. So I can relate to everything that y'all have said so far. And I think this sort of social paranoia is such a big part of BPD for me. And I never really recognized it as paranoia because I always thought that paranoid meant thinking things like conspiracy theories or thinking people are out to get you. I didn't realize how much I was really paranoid about making sure I was always first in my favorite person's life. If they were showing anyone attention, I would get really jealous. Like, I remember there was this one time my favorite person and I were at a party and they were talking to someone else and they were like hitting it off and getting on really well. And I could not stand it. I kept inserting myself between them to be part of the conversation, not to actually engage with the content, but just to insert myself and be like, no, this is my favorite person. You can't have them. Like, I had this idea in my mind that there wasn't enough attention and love to go around, and that if my favorite person was showing love and attention to someone else, that meant they were taking it away from me. And I could not sit with that distress. And that sort of in turn activated the paranoia and then the frantic efforts to avoid abandonment. I'm like, no, you're not going to abandon me to this person. I'm going to sit right here in the middle and you ain't leaving me.
I keep picturing you like lifting your leg while like pee on him to mark your
property. A little bit though, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's and it It's hard to talk about this and not feel a great deal of like shame and guilt about it, because it's such an icky behavior, especially in the society that I'm from. Jealousy is really seen as like a very toxic trait. If you're jealous, ooh, you don't trust your partner, you don't trust your friends, like, how dare you be jealous? That's a really bad thing. So like admitting to that feels really like gross to me. And it's exactly, it's like, yeah, like marking your territory. But I think I had to admit to that. Otherwise, I was never going to be able to realize that it was a problem and move forward from it.
Something that I found really difficult on that, though, is that I tend to, or had a tendency in the past, to attract people that were not good for me and didn't turn out to be decent people. I feel like you can get into a bit of a tailspin of trying to figure out whether that jealousy is coming from a place that somebody else has kind of has given you cause to feel that way, or whether you're doing it to yourself. Obviously, nobody else is in control of your emotions and your reactions to things. But sometimes people can activate jealousy, I feel, by like crossing boundaries that have been said or things like that, you know. And then if you're in a social context where the community is very judgmental of jealousy as a toxic trait or whatever, it can be really hard to evaluate that. You immediately feel like you're the problem. So it's a little complicated.
Think about like self-esteem and how you feel about yourself. If you feel so badly about yourself, of course you're going to feel jealous when your favorite person is talking to someone else, because you're going to think, maybe not consciously, but like, this person's could leave me any second and like forget about me in any second, because your worth is nothing without them, really. It's like you don't have that on your own. And then going back to choosing partners who don't treat us well, it's again a reflection of that low self-esteem. Like, we choose partners who treat us in a way, as like horrible as this sounds, in a way that we feel about ourselves, because it feels more comfortable, it feels more safe. And then when you're with someone who treats you amazing, it can actually feel like a little, maybe a little weird at first, because it feels like, maybe you feel like, I don't deserve this. Like, that, like, what are you talking about? Like, you love me? Like, I don't deserve this amazing treatment.
Yeah. I think for me that the key with the jealousy thing is it's less about whether it was justified and more how I behaved as a result of it. In hindsight, I think I probably picked someone that was not great for me. And instead of like going up to them and having a conversation about what was happening, I was just like, F you, I'm just gonna like make the situation be the way that I want it, right? It's sort of both.
So as we have said, we experience all of the symptoms when we have this favorite person, but I like to say it as a primary symptom, which can trigger a secondary one. So for me, the primary one, which was like the most pronounced of it, was the fear of abandonment, because I was constantly on the lookout that I'm going to get left behind or something horrible is going to happen, which is going to take this person away from me. The secondary symptom that it triggered in me was probably self-harm. And I'm not very proud of it. I could never make people see the kind of emotional pain I was in. Mm. And I really, really wanted that one person, my favorite person, to understand that you have to know how much I'm hurting. And they never got it. So the closest weapon I had was to physically do that so that people would at least see that, okay, you have something going on with you and that needs attention, not because I want the limelight, but I just want it to be heard.
I engaged in self-harm at the end of my FP relationship, my marriage. You really hit the nail on the head. I hadn't engaged in physical self-harm before that, but I was in so much pain and it seemed like words couldn't express it, that was the only way I could express it. And it shocked even me. For the first time in my life, I couldn't even put into words my pain.
99% of my self-harm has been in the context of the favorite person relationship. Half the time, I wasn't even really thinking when I was doing it. It was just, I felt like the amount of emotional pain I was in would kill me. And I felt like I had to release that energy somehow and also show people, like, I am in so much pain, I can't contain it in my body anymore. This is how much this hurts.
If one of the smaller actions are not reaching them, then you do a bigger, more riskier thing just to make them know that, okay, now you have to see me.
Yeah. It's like the intensity that leads to impulsive actions too.
And I think it goes to show the intensity of the FP relationship.
So for me, it's a little bit different because obviously having a dual diagnosis of borderline and schizotypal, I'm sort of in a bit of a grey area because I don't feel as intensely possibly as other people with BPD do. But I feel more than your average schizotypal probably. My sort of favourite person relationships have happened almost by chance. So when I was younger, I struggled a lot socially because that kind of is part and parcel of STPD. And I found that I sort of drifted through life and then got caught in other people's net. And then that person just became my favourite person. And I found that because I spent so much of my time quite isolated and quite alone, that that person became the centre of my world because I literally didn't have anyone else. And it's not that I didn't care about them, but it was almost like I used them to fit into society. And I don't mean that I exploited them in that way, but I would use them to mirror. So a lot of the people that ended up as my favourite persons, they were very opposite to me. So they would be quite extroverted, they would be really popular, and I would kind of hitch my wagon to them, and it was great, and I felt like a normal person. And then when it ended, it was really horrible because not only had I lost that person, but I'd also essentially lost my social standing. And it was never that I was really popular, it was never that I had loads of friends, but it was about the fact that I went back to being quite isolated. And that was really difficult for me to handle as somebody who struggled so much with social skills.
Sounds almost like your social identity, that aspect of your identity was like dependent on that person. So it still kind of goes back to the identity piece, but just in a very specific way. It's like my social identity is dependent on my connection to this person, and I don't have a space in this world that I can understand without my connection to this person.
Yeah, definitely. And I think looking at my relationships with my favorite people, I think it was more for reassurance that I was normal. Like, it was so great that someone liked me because I wasn't used to that. And I think, you know, the fact that somebody saw something in me and wanted to be my friend and wanted to spend time with me, that felt really validating for somebody who didn't really have that at the time.
I think my first FP was my first proper boyfriend. So it meant that, like, for me as a growing up as a gay guy, the FP was really heavily intertwined with my sense of identity as a gay man. Having a boyfriend was almost like political. It caused a lot of hassle in my household. It was like a statement of, oh, now I'm comfortable being out and open. But when I consider separating from that person, one of my first thoughts was like, God, like, everyone's going to assume that this is typical of a gay relationship, like unstable, can't last for very long. Because this was sort of things that my parents would say to me out of fear. They were afraid that my life would be like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like in that way, this kind of like identity piece was sort of pushed on me and became something that I also adopted.
How has having a favorite person affected your other relationships? I think this is the primary time in my life where I really treated other people badly because I just was so focused on that favorite person relationship. There was a time where I was in partial inpatient hospitalization, and my favorite person and I had been in a romantic relationship. We were broken up, and I was like doing so horribly. And I had a conversation with my dad where I had concocted this whole plan of some reason why I was going to go back to our hometown, which had nothing to do with my favorite person on the surface. At the time, my parents were also supporting me. So this was basically me asking my dad for money to do this. And he kind of called me out and was like, I really think this is you trying to come up with a reason to ambush your ex and start that relationship. And I'm really worried about you because it's been it was really dangerous. And I kind of threw a huge fit. And I basically told him, if you don't help me, then there's no point in me talking to you. If you don't help me, I'm just going to go hurt myself. In my head, I convinced myself that it was all about this project. And if I happened to run into my ex, how awesome would that be? But that was actually the main goal, right? And I didn't even think about how my dad felt in that situation. I was essentially using him for money to try to get into this position to get back with my favorite person because I was in so much emotional pain that was the only thing that I could think of.
I picture it like all my other relationships are like withering on the vine while I'm overwatering one. I'm putting so much into this one. And they all end up dying, right? Like one's being overwatered and overcared for, and the others are being ignored and they're kind of withering away.
It was not like I completely ignored my other relationships, but a lot of the conversations that I was having with people in my life, and these are the people who are really important to me, like my parents and my sister and my other friends, it was conversation just about my FP and my relationship. And it was only after our relationship failed to work out and we broke up, then I realized that it's been months since I've had a proper conversation with my friends or my sister, which was not related to my relationship or to what my FP was doing or how they were making me feel. So I was not being overtly cruel, but I was really, really ignorant.
I have a bit of a different experience in terms of the impact, particularly on friendships. I made a very conscious effort to like keep my friendships close and strong. I don't feel like I neglected my friendships in any way because of my FP relationships. But what I did do was that I went to really extreme lengths to protect my FP at the expense of myself, which if I give an example, when my ex cheated on me several times, I did not tell any of my friends because I thought that they would immediately hate him. I didn't tell my parents that I was having a bad relationship or any of these things because I was alone in Brazil and I didn't want them to freak out. And how this links back to maybe how that affected my friendships. It just meant that later on, when things really did get rough, my friends had to do a lot more work with me in supporting me and stuff because they hadn't been included in that at the beginning. And it was kind of like I was lying to them almost. And of course, they understood the reasoning, but I think it just ended up making, you know, that end point when I eventually left really stressful for a lot of my friendships because my friends then had to be the support system for this thing that was like cascading down all at once. So
what Jay has said has actually reminded me of something that I've said before. So most of my favourite people have been male, and I don't really know why that is, because there hasn't necessarily been a romantic component to that or an attraction on either side. It's just that that's how it's happened. But I have found that obviously, being somebody who is attracted to males and having a favourite person who is attracted to females primarily, that's obviously created a little bit of an issue when the other person has then entered into a relationship with somebody else. And I can see it from the girlfriend's point of view, because if you have a boyfriend who has a female who sees them as their favorite person, that's going to create a really difficult dynamic in that relationship where you feel like you're competing for attention. And because I got burnt with that quite a lot in the past, I always, when my favorite person got into a relationship with somebody else, I would just let that relationship fizzle out. And although it sort of came to a natural conclusion anyway, because when you start dating someone, your attention goes onto that person. It did mean that I was stuck in a loop of having favourite people who I not dropped, but lost from my life when they got into romantic relationships. And that meant that it was quite difficult for me to sustain any long-term friendships from that.
I realise that for most of the group of people who are here today, it's been mostly romantic relationships, but I've heard plenty of people talk about it with friendships, people talk about it with like parents, siblings, therapists, is not uncommon. So it really can be anyone.
Looking back before I had romantic relationships, you know, I had my nanny bee, and then I could see it. It was almost like FP light with my friends throughout high school. I would have one like best friend and something would eventually happen and I didn't have the emotional intelligence or skills to be able to work through whatever disagreement. So then all of a sudden I wouldn't be friends with that person and I'd find a new person. And that was who I hung out with all the time. I was always calling. We were always in touch. We were always doing, you know, fun things, but it wasn't, and the end of those friendships would be hard. But it wasn't to the same intensity as it was with a romantic partner. So it was kind of like light.
I like that term, FP light.
I think there's definitely like, it's definitely a spectrum, you know, there are hardcore FPs, there's FP lights, you know, that aren't, it's not as intense, but I'm thinking too, like with adolescence too, it is like a weird age where you do get really like, you know, I'm thinking of like young people just like really identifying with other people around them. But that's a really good example, again, of like bringing back to the identity. When you're an adolescent, you're trying to figure out who you are. And like you do that by relating to people around you. But that's also like the big thing with BPD is you kind of don't ever end up forming that solid sense of who you are.
I feel like I was stuck in a perpetual state of adolescence. You know, it's like being in a dressing room and trying on all the different clothes and nothing ever fits. And you're just like, you never walk out with anything. You're just like, I've tried on 100 things and nothing fit. Why does nothing fit? And then you're like, at least for me, I was like in my 20s, late 20s, being like, who am I?
Yeah.
Felt like I'd been 15 for 10 years. What have you done to manage the intensity of the favorite person attachment?
I've just worked very hard on not having one and trying to recognize those early signs. Because I didn't find the FP attachment to bring a lot of positives into my life. The intensity is too much. The giving, it's not even giving up of yourself because you don't have yourself to give up. It was the ability for somebody else to dictate who I was, how I felt. It was no sense of ownership of myself. So I've tried to be very conscious to not replicate that and to make myself my own favorite person. So I self-validate a lot. I plan dates with myself. Like sometimes on a, you know, a weekend night, I don't want to hang out with anybody, but I'm not just like sitting on the couch watching TV. I have a dance party with myself. I light my candles. I do some yoga. I'll take fun photos of myself. So trying to really pour what I would have poured into another person into myself.
The pouring reminds me of the other thing that you said about the watering on the vines. Like I'm just sitting here thinking, I think one of the problems that I had with the favorite person a relationship was that for me, it was like, this person should be all the roles to me. A parent, a partner, a best friend, everything in one. And I think subconsciously my thought was, if this is the only person who can hurt me, then I can put all my attention on this relationship and make it work. And I think I didn't realize until later how much I ended up actually suffocating the relationship by placing all of these expectations on one person. And so for me, managing the intensity of that relationship really comes down to placing expectations on them that are appropriate for their role and diversifying those relationships. Mm-hmm. I try to maintain better, more intense connections with my friends. And that's been really scary, I think, because diversifying that at first really felt like I was giving more people the tools to hurt me. But I actually think that because it's split up, the damage is less intense. Like if somebody hurts my feelings, it's not quite as bad because they aren't my only intense connection. And so I don't even know if I would say I have a favorite person anymore. It's like, I think my husband is the closest, but it's not really the same.
That's really a sign of recovery, that you can have an intense relationship with your husband, but it's not a favorite person relationship. And I honestly, for a relationship to last, a marriage type partnership relationship, I think you need that. Because I almost want to give a moment of silence to favorite people, because I think that it can be it's almost like getting hit by a truck. You know, they're walking along, living their life, and all of a sudden they are the focus of very intense feelings and emotions, and they have huge responsibilities keeping this person regulated. And I think that I cannot imagine that it is a great place to be.
Yeah, that whole, I was like, I can't live without you, which is like something people say sometimes in a like a romantic way, but I meant it very literally.
Yeah. And what kind of responsibility?
It's a lot of pressure. Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on somebody.
It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of like, you suffocate, like you were saying, you suffocate them.
Which doesn't discredit like that they may not have been a great person in the first place, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're not, I'm not saying like, you know, as Jay said, like sometimes we don't pick the best partners for ourselves or pick the best FP, but I just really feel that as people with BPD, for me anyway,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's very important that I don't affect other people in that way, because that type of relationship, it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate for the other person. It's not fair.
What I'll say for the scope of this episode and bringing it back to the identity piece, and this is such a vague thing to say, and I think it frustrates people because it is very hard to build a sense of self on your own, and it takes a lot of time. But a lot of that comes from exploring your own values and creating positives for yourself in your own life, doing things that you like to do, and like really nurturing yourself, Georgia, like you were saying, like doing things for yourself, finding out like who you are. Yeah, and really focusing on that first, and then trying to create plans with a bunch of different people and having things for yourself so that it's not just one person as the focus, because it can really quickly and easily just fall back into that same pattern. And I truly believe that one of the most important things that you need to stop this pattern from happening over and over again is having a sense of yourself that you like, someone that you like in yourself, and don't feel like you feel so much of a need for someone else to reflect your worthiness or your goodness as a person.
I feel like there are three main ways that I've tried to manage. One is checking the facts of the situation, because I'm often glorifying them or overdoing a negative or whatever. So I find it's helpful to keep myself in check where those things are concerned and try to assess whether or not they actually align with the reality. The other thing is not shying away from talking to my therapist in particular about these relationships, because as I mentioned before, sometimes I go to an extreme to protect the person. And I think my therapist's voice in particular is one that I take very seriously, and I have a good relationship with her, so I feel like if she says something to me, I'm going to take it on board. And then the last thing is trying to have a really broad sweeping friendship group of people that I can do different things with. I started to realize that I wasn't really falling into these FP dynamics after I started to put effort into trying to foster relationships, because I think beforehand I made friendships with people and assumed that if they did not reach a certain intensity, and if I wasn't able to share everything with them, that it wasn't a friendship. That's rubbish. Friends serve different roles, and that was like a hard lesson for me to learn, but it was a really important one, because I don't feel so alone, and I don't feel so much in need of finding that like one person that I can do absolutely everything with. Now I have people that I only see at the office, and we just talk and we share jokes or whatever, and that's fine. And then I have people that I go and have meals with, and that's fine. I have people that I travel with, and that's fine. And then I have people that I do all of it with. But that's been pretty essential for me trying to avoid or manage, I guess, the FP situation.
I used to feel like I was a vessel with like a major hole inside it. So it doesn't matter how much you keep pouring into it, it'll never be enough. Even when the affection is coming from my side, or even when the affection is coming from outside, especially when it's coming from somebody that you expect so many things from, like a favorite person. And I was so mad at myself because I did not understand why it did not feel like they were loving me enough. And I knew rationally that they're doing the best they could. So my therapist said that, so if you think that there's a hole to fix, then what do you think is the best thing that you can do with it? And I'm like, okay, if the vessel is me, then I have to learn what are the parts that make me and what are the parts that I'm lacking or that I need from other people, or the feeling of not ever being enough, where is it actually coming from? And while diving into that self-exploration of who I was as a person and why it was so hard for me to validate myself or to love myself, the acceptance of the fact that, yes, I am not being able to do these things, but I will learn and one day I will be able to, was probably the first step I took in the journey of the favorite person relationship. From the time that I've started to take these steps, my current relationships are a lot better because there are many close people in my life, but there's not one favorite person. There's not one person who can, you know, make or break my day for me. And I take that as a win.
In terms of managing favorite person relationships, are actually two quite significant things that happened to help me with that. The first was realizing that actually I was misjudging a lot of these FP relationships. So whereas I was essentially putting someone on a pedestal and thinking they were this really important key person in my life, actually quite a lot of the time they didn't feel the same way about me. And it would be the case that I was really close to them, but actually they had other people that they would go to that they felt closer to. And although that didn't feel very nice, it was quite a good way of putting things in perspective for me in terms of how to view that relationship if somebody else didn't see it the same way that I did. And then the second thing that was quite important was I actually saw it from the other side. I was essentially a favorite person for somebody else, and yeah, that sucked. Like that was not a good experience. And I think seeing it from that side as well helped me to realize that probably the way that I viewed relationships with other people needed to change. And what I now do is actively cultivate friendships with females, which I didn't do before. It wasn't that I necessarily had a problem with women. It was just that those relationships had not been forthcoming. Whereas now I will actively seek out female friendships. And the male friends that I do have in my life, I will also include their partners rather than just cutting them off when they get into relationships. And that's diversified my friendship circle and brought a lot more benefits to my life. And I definitely have a lot more healthier friendships now. They're not in abundance necessarily because I have quite a small social circle, but the ones that I do have are much healthier and much easier to maintain than they used to be.
So one last thing I want to say, and this has come up a lot in our conversation today, feelings of shame surrounding the favorite person and behaviors associated with having a favorite person relationship. So I guess the last tool or piece of advice I'd love to give is just to hold compassion for yourself, because it just adds a whole extra layer of pain to be so ashamed. And although these behaviors are often not effective and can be damaging to yourself and for other people and for the favorite person, it's not that anyone ever chose to have attachments like these. And you need to be able to hold that grace for yourself and show that compassion to yourself, because it's extremely painful. So just, yeah, show yourself some compassion.
Well, thank you everyone so much for watching. We hope you got a nugget of wisdom to take with you on your journey. Again, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications so that you do not miss a single episode. We'll be back on Friday for more on the favorite person. And then next week, we'll be starting a brand new topic. So we will see you next time.
Okay. Bye.